Hello and welcome to the Vinyl Exam, the podcast about vinyl records and the people who collect them. I am your host, Sama Ahmed. Hope you'll forgive me. I'm a little under the weather right now. That's why my voice sounds a little funny. I just want to say, if you remember a few episodes ago, we released this mix called Culture Shock Volume 1 by the producer Motion Correct. That was in episode 155, if you've not already heard it. And I've been hanging out a lot with Motion Correct since I left San Francisco and moved to Princeton, New Jersey back in October. We mostly chill and talk and listen to records at his place, and I'd say about 9 days out of 10, he'll play some amazing record that I've never heard of before, and I'll end up asking him about it. So instead of keeping these moments private, I thought it's high time we actually get Motion Correct on the podcast for what I hope to be a recurring series.
So, Motion Correct, also known as Jamal, that's my real name. I'm a producer, musician in general, and a DJ. And I'm also a graduate student at Princeton studying the neuroscience of music perception. I would say I'm most interested in jazz, hip-hop beats, instrumental, hip-hop beats, experimental music, and that's as far as production goes. And listening, I'm way more broad in my interest. So, I'm heavily inspired by, or was heavily inspired and still am heavily inspired by the sort of brain feeder, low end theory movement out of Los Angeles and the rest of the world that got sort of into that style of making beats before and after brain feeder.
Okay, tell us a little bit more about what brain feeder is.
Oh yeah, so Brain Feeder is a record label started up by Flying Lotus. I don't know, maybe around like 2010 or something like that. I'm not sure. But it's basically an experimental music label that puts on like beat makers like himself, also jazz musicians. Yeah, and I think other experimental music in general. So yeah, I remember one summer in undergrad, maybe in my sophomore year of college, a friend had actually introduced me to Flying Lotus by showing me a mix that he did for the BBC, and it's like a 2-hour mix, and it was just beautiful, and showed me all sorts of songs and sounds that I was not used to hearing before. So I pretty much listened to that for the whole summer and sort of used that as a platform for finding like other artists that were on there and other artists associated with those people. So they were actually, in some ways they felt like two different goals, but they turned into the same goal at some point, fortunately. But my production and my research were kind of, you know, different when I was getting into neuroscience and cognitive science. And so I would be producing all the time, like almost every day, and I would take a few classes on music theory and stuff like that in undergrad. But I was working in a cognitive science lab that studied sort of like an artificial intelligence in like the classroom and helping people improve test scores on standardized tests by like employing these artificially intelligent machines to their schools. And so that they were super wedded at that point, my interest in music and my research. But in some of the classes that I took at Memphis, like my research methods class, we had to do a big project for the class, and I chose to do mine on finding like relationships between freestyling ability and scores on measures of creativity, and you know, just a general feeling that the more, if you define freestyling in a certain way, the more that you can like use that structure to relate to actual like measures that have been made by like psychologists and stuff, that there should be some relationship there. People's ability to come up with similes and metaphors really easily, and measures that test people's abilities to come up with similes and metaphors. But I didn't really find much in that study. But it wasn't until I got to Princeton and I worked here for a couple of years that I had basically proposed several research projects to my PI before I became a grad student here. not related to music, just about memory, because I work in a computational memory lab. And he wasn't really down with those first few ideas. And then one time I was reading a paper about how the brain makes predictions about the world based on how the environment changes, whether it be a slow change, a gradual change, or a fast or abrupt change. And I proposed an experiment idea to him about seeing if we could use mixes, which have that that property in them already, of smooth and abrupt transitions, to see if we could maybe like affect people's memory for items that they studied while listening to the mixes. And we got some cool stuff out of that, and we didn't publish it though, and so we wanted to sort of hone in on this music perception aspect of the research more so than anything, to sort of get a better idea of how music was being processed in the brain using the techniques that we usually use to analyze brain data. And since then, I've just been, you know, really, really invested in, at this point, you know, studying the perception of music and event boundaries in music in the brain, and also doing a lot of my own music on the side. And so now I would say that both my interest in music and my research are like pretty much hand in hand. I have people come in and listen to a sequence of songs. So this isn't the transition research anymore. This is just during this the question we're asking in this research is during song listening, like of a single song, for example, when does the brain decide to chunk the song into different events? And so we basically have people come in and listen to 16 songs, like 8 of them are classical, 8 of them are jazz. And then we have them do that for like 3 days. They listen to the 16 songs on one day, and then the same 16 songs on the second day. And on the third day, we bring them into the fMRI scanner, and we have them listen to those 16 songs twice. And we're trying to also see like whether brain regions become better at predicting events in the song as well. So that's why we have them get familiar with the songs first. And then after we collect all their data for like, I got like 25 people to do this. And we use algorithms to find boundaries in the songs and also in the brain data, and try to see if those boundaries found by the algorithms match up with boundaries found by people who just segment the songs in a different experiment, the same songs. So like human annotations match with brain recognition of those changes happening in the songs. So yeah, fMRI is like functional magnetic resonance imaging. It's a technique used for measuring blood oxygenation to the brain. And basically, you know, whenever you're not doing a task, there's definitely blood going to the brain, but we're able to pick up the changes in blood flow better or more easily whenever we have someone doing a task or perceiving a certain stimulus, and then we can measure in a certain region where we would expect that to be processing that stimulus. Like if I were playing you a song, we'd expect the region called the auditory cortex, which is the sound hub of the brain essentially, to be most responsive to that song and also start to get more blood flow and oxygenation to those regions. So yeah, I wanted to talk about an album I got from the Princeton Record Exchange recently called Transparent Days. It's a compilation of psychedelic rock music from the West Coast around the 60s and 70s. I'm going to grab the record really quick. One second. Yeah, so it's called Transparent Days, West Coast Nuggets. Consist of a lot of awesome artists, that some of which I'm familiar with and most of which I'm not. And it's a Record Store Day release, I think, from last year. This sleeve is really, really cool. It's got a bunch of eyes on it, as you know, people tend to see in their psychedelic experiences, and a huge opening into space with columns and three ladies holding up the label for the song West Coast Nuggets in Greek clothing. And on top of the columns is a tambourine and some glasses and a die, a single dice. The first song that I wanted to play is by a band called The Peanut Butter Conspiracy. I don't know much about this band other than the fact that I got a single record from them, and I actually like it a lot. And they happen to be on this compilation, and this song is called Time Is After You. And I especially like this song because it has a sort of dark but strong psychedelic quality to it, and is sort of kind of an ADD-ish song. It has a lot of changes, sort of not knowing where it's going to go next. And time is the enemy of man.
Time is on our side, that's what we say. I won't take that ride, I've got to get away. Time is after you, you better run. You better go, get away before it's time out, time out, time out, time out. There it goes again, messing up my mind, wasting all my time. Oh, why? I just wanna live my life. It takes time to live, but no time to die. Time out, time out, time out, time out. There it goes again. Messing up my mind, wasting all my time. Oh, why? My life, free as life, no time card, no alarm clock, no red lights and other miscellaneous to live my life.
I just want to live my life.
I just want to live my life.
So the second song that I wanted to play is a song by a band called Art Guy, or it might be, well, a single guy named Art Guy, but I think the band is also called Art Guy. And the song is called Where You Gonna Go, and this is on the B-side, categorized as garage punk. And this song is very energetic and has a sort of, you know, surfy California vibe to it, but sort of a little grungy, and has a really fun chorus and some nice harmony in the chorus. This is sort of my, one of the reasons I got this is to sort of expand my psychedelic rock knowledge base. So instead of, I almost got like a Love album, but I was like, Love was actually on this compilation. So I was like, I'll just, you know, learn about more artists. And so this is me actually learning about them.
Gonna be
Okay, so this third song that I wanted to play is from a band called MC Square. It's called Smiling, and it's on the C side of the record, classified as pop psych. And this song is very interesting. It is a very sort of like world music heavy song. Starts off with some what sound like Brazilian rhythms and uses some Brazilian instrumentation, and throughout the whole song is sort of jungle safari-esque, but while extremely hardcore psychedelic, sort of like the United States of America, that style of psychedelia. The song was recorded in 1968, and basically there's the lead vocalist on this track is Mike Clough and Linda Carey, and Linda has an extremely beautiful voice and some very, very strong harmony in the song. I have had this album for a few days now, and I've been very, very happy to sort of reinstate my psychedelic infatuation that sort of tapered off because of my strong interest in world music lately. But so I've been trying to, as I might have mentioned earlier, just sort of trying to get back into the psychedelic sound I was searching for. I also sort of took a break because I knew about psychedelic music, psychedelic rock music from that era, from like a more commercial perspective. So like, you know, the Doors and Jimi Hendrix and these people. And I loved that stuff when I was younger, but I kind of always wanted to like see who else was doing this kind of stuff, in the States and around the world, that didn't get as much attention maybe. And so some of the people that, I guess some of the bands that led me to this type of sound specifically is our bands like Arzachel and Soft Machine, who are not on this record because this is a West Coast album. And I think they're from other places, but, those are other artists you can check out that have a sort of, grungy, raw 60s, 70s psychedelic rock style. If you're interested, and if you want to check out any of my music, you can find me on SoundCloud at motion_correct. Okay, so this next song that I wanted to play is a song by the Electric Prunes called Shadows. It's on the D side of the album, classified as Psychedelia. I feel like this song on the side, for, in my opinion, characterizes the sort of psychedelic sound more so than the other songs, although I could just be, that's just my opinion. It has some very like major and positive qualities in terms of mood, and is also met with some sort of dark, reverb-y section that I think really drives the song for me the most. And it's also kind of like one of the songs from earlier, like a very grungy sort of song. I think they even call it punk psychedelia in the liner notes. And there's also a very interesting falsetto in the chorus, leading back into each verse, which is super, super clean. So yeah, although I picked these four songs, I think there are a ton of awesome songs on this record, and I would have picked more from each side, but I thought that these songs were a pretty good representation of the like sort of sound quality and awesomeness of the album. So check it out.
Thanks a lot to Motion Correct for sharing that record with us. I will have links to Motion Correct's music and to the mix that he released with us in episode 155. It's an assembly of world music and international tunes, and it's been getting a lot of downloads on our podcast, so make sure to add it to your Workday Music playlist. Once again, my name is Sam Ahmed. You can catch us online using the handle @TheVinylExam or on our website, www.thevinylexam.com. We release new episodes every other week on iTunes and on SoundCloud, so make sure to subscribe. And special thanks to our Patreon supporters, Yan Wong and Brian Siebold, and to our executive producers, Austell Gray, Ben Lack, and Janine Cuevas. You too can become a producer for our show by visiting our crowdfunding page, www.patreon.com/thevinylexam. Take care, and catch you next time.